I'm Marty Moscoe-Wayne. Welcome to Radio Times. Living in close quarters, along with the stresses from the pandemic and the financial insecurity from job losses, are increasing the risk for victims of domestic violence. While sheltering in place can provide safety from the threat of coronavirus, it can also put people in greater danger from their intimate partner with little or no means of escape. Today on Radio Times, we're going to talk about domestic violence during the pandemic, how the quarantine can make it harder for people to get help, and what agencies are doing to provide support and treatment services. And we have two guests who have joined us for the hour. Irene Lindsay Brantley is Program Director at Women in Transition. That's a nonprofit in Philadelphia. They provide domestic violence counseling and addiction recovery services. And Irene Lindsay Brantley, nice to have you with us on Radio Times.
Thank you, Marty.
You're welcome. Also with us is Tony Lapp. He's co-director of an organization called Menergy. They're actually in the process of changing their name to Cordia. Nonetheless, they are an intervention, treatment, training, and education program working to stop harmful behavior and intimate partner violence. And Tony Lapp, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Good morning, Marty. It's lovely to be here.
Nice to have you both with us. And to our listeners, as always, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. Irene, if I could begin with you, but Tony, I want to put the same question to you as well. Can we assume that there is an increase in domestic violence because of these stay-at-home orders and the pandemic? Irene?
Yes, there is an increase in domestic violence in from the physical side as well as from the emotional side. So we're seeing people who are calling because they are fearing for their lives, and we see people calling who are feeling trapped by this relationship. And that person may not have called before, but the fact that they've been home with this abusive partner all this time is helping them to realize that this is indeed an abusive relationship.
Are you getting more calls at Women in Transition?
Yes, we're getting more calls on the hotline. We're part of the Philadelphia Domestic Violence Hotline, so we're getting more calls on that line, which is a crisis line, people calling about shelter and issues around food insecurity and things like that. But also on our lifeline, which is WITS telephone counseling line, we're getting a lot of calls from people who just need to talk, who just need to process this with someone else. And so we're seeing an uptick in both of those services.
Tony, from your perspective, and I think, you know, everyone is feeling some degree of stress because of the pandemic and the quarantine and all the uncertainty. Can we assume that for abusers, there's also a level of stress because of all this?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, COVID really is a risk factor for domestic violence. At the family level, it creates circumstances that we've known for a long time lead to greater stress and tension and commonly the greater reactivity. So it's we're seeing that in our clients. The irony is that people may not be reaching out to some of the formal systems like 911 and some others, but they're clearly reaching out to the hotlines, and we're doing checking in with partners and things like that. So we are seeing this playing out. It also, you know, COVID is also really potentially a big problem because of the way it stresses the finances of governments. So that's, you know, it has the potential to really threaten services and systems we've set up to support the people when they need it. So it's a real big problem.
As you say, you're talking with some of your clients. What are they telling you?
I'm talking about we have contact with partners of our clients too.
Right.
They're talking about the difficulties of, when you're living with someone, 24/7, even in the best of circumstances, that's hard. This creates additional stresses. People don't get breaks. They're very worried about finances, anxious about the possibility of exposure to the virus. And it's just a sort of a formula for greater stress.
Irene, I'm thinking of someone who might be home in a situation where there is intimate partner abuse or violence, but they feel that they cannot leave. What is there something they can do to diffuse the situation? What is your advice to those people?
Well, first of all, we acknowledge that that person knows more about the situation than anybody. And so helping them to understand that they are the experts in their situation, because they may not be feeling very empowered. So they are the experts in this situation. Asking them to walk through their home, wherever they're living, and look for places that could be safe. Look for places that are unsafe, like possibly the kitchen or the bathroom. Think about a way to get out in an emergency. Think about what to tell the children if there are children involved. Think about what they know about this abusive partner and what some of the triggers are that they've seen, and figuring out how to recognize those triggers and trust their gut that they know how to protect themselves and their children.
I'm thinking, though, and let's take a small apartment. And you said the kitchen and the bathroom are probably not safe places to be. Let's say there's a living room and a bedroom, and that's about it. Mm-hmm. Where do they go?
A closet may be a safe place to be.
Wow.
It just may wound up being a closet. It may be letting other people in the apartment building know that this is going on, having a safe space to run out to somebody else's apartment. In this situation, though, people are feeling trapped on so many different levels. Mm-hmm. And so what we do a lot with our Lifeline counseling is just help people see some kind of light, some kind of way that they can feel like they're in control of the situation. And sometimes it's just getting in a closet and calling the Lifeline, for example, just to talk to somebody, just to talk. We've talked with people who are almost whispering on the phone, because they just need to reach out to somebody.
So they don't feel so alone, because,
so
I mean, I think...
they don't feel so alone.
Right, right. Tony, let me go back to you, and Irene used the word control. In terms of understanding violence between intimates, how much is control sort of driving this? And when people are home alone, stuck together, I would assume control is just this weapon that can be used.
Yeah. You know, people are complicated. I do think that not everybody is the same. There certainly are people for whom the intentional sort of conscious seeking of control is very much a motivator. And that's really risky and really dangerous. I think there are also a lot of people for whom they're sort of in their own minds, they wouldn't be thinking of what they're doing as seeking control, but they would be really struggling at many different levels with feeling out of control and doing things that the effect of which is very controlling as a way of trying to avoid feeling out of control. It's a small point, but it's like the idea is to try to sort of understand where somebody's coming from. I do think that that's sometimes a motivator, just not being able to handle in a productive way the sort of normal stresses and frustrations of life.
And is that just they don't know how to do this? There are impulse control issues. This is what they saw growing up. This is how they think it's okay to treat other people. Or are they just out of control, as you say?
Sure. It could be any of those things. Mm-hmm. I think that at the best of times, all of us have some impulse in us to try to avoid feeling powerless and vulnerable and out of control. And the question about how we go about addressing that and whether we do it in healthy ways, in ways that aren't harming of others, is really important. And I think a lot of the folks that come to our program for a variety of reasons have learned bad ways or made bad decisions about how to handle those feelings of anxiety and vulnerability.
I mean, I appreciate that. I mean, it's important to understand the behavior, but then to dig below it to try to find out what's driving that behavior. Irene, you mentioned children, and I just want to make sure that we address, you know, under these unusual but dangerous circumstances, what a person needs to tell their child if there is something going on in the home that's threatening and dangerous.
Well, one of the things that when we're working with clients, we say it's important to say something, because if children don't have an answer, they will make up one. And the one they make up may mean that the child feels that they're the ones at fault for what's going on with their parents. And so we encourage to say something. And depending on the age level of the child is what matters. And so for younger children, it could mean mommy and daddy are having problems, or the parents are having problems. And so sometimes we yell at each other, but we want you to know that we both love you and that we're always going to make sure that you're safe. That's enough for that particular age group, because that's what children worry about. Am I going to be safe? And am I going to have my toys, because they want to be able to play? But that's what we for that age group. For older children, we can talk more about, you know, sometimes, you know, relationships are complicated. Sometimes we don't agree. Sometimes we yell because we don't agree. Sometimes we hurt each other's feelings. But just want you to know that we love you, and we will do everything that we can to keep you safe. Those are the things that from our work is what children are concerned about, is it's, first of all, it's not their fault, and that they're loved and that they're going to be safe.
Tony, do you want to add? Yeah, no, go ahead. I mean,
yeah. So, however, though, we also safety plan with parents around should this escalate, And we have to leave. I need you to do what I tell you to do. If I say get up, put your coat on, even if you just have your pajamas on, put your coat on, because the safety planning, the other piece is already to have a bag packed somewhere, and we have to go, that I need you to just quietly get up, grab your teddy bear or whatever favorite toy, and we'll go. And mommy will explain it to you, or daddy will explain it to you later.
Tony, you want to add
anything? Safety plan for what if, for what if, yes.
Exactly, mm-hmm. And planning for that safety plan. Tony, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I just want to say, you know, this is a really unprecedented circumstance, at least in terms of our lifetime, and we're sort of figuring out the priorities, the things that are most important as we go along. We are continuing to offer programming. It's remote, which creates problems for some folks. Some people can adjust to that very easily, but others can't. And just in terms of like what we're focusing on, a lot of what we're now focusing on is really sort of like helping people to be thinking through the stresses of their immediate situation. It's a lot more sort of in the moment problem solving than it ever has been. To try to get people, you know, essentially to reduce the harm as much as possible.
Absolutely. And I do want to talk about remote, and we're going to give out some phone numbers as well. That's Tony Lapp, and he's co-director of Menergy. And again, that's an intervention, treatment, training, and education program working to stop harmful behavior and intimate partner violence. Irene Lindsay Brantley with us, program director at Women in Transition. That's a nonprofit in Philadelphia. They provide domestic violence counseling, addiction recovery services. And we are talking about the threat, the potential of domestic violence under the pandemic. Do stay with us. Much more after this very short break. We'll be right back. This is Radio.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm Marty Moscow-Wayne talking with Irene Lindsay Brantley, again, Program Director at Women in Transition, Tony Lapp, Co-Director of Menergy. We are talking about domestic violence. It increases when there are things like natural disasters, and violence prevention advocates believe that the stresses of the pandemic are putting more people at risk for abuse by their intimate partners. And if you want to join our conversation, you can send us an email, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can also tweet us at @WHYY Radio Times. And let me just give out a couple of important phone numbers. There is a 24-hour citywide Philadelphia domestic violence hotline. That's 1-866-723-3014. There's the National Domestic Violence Hotline. That's 1-800 1-800-799-SAFE, S-A-F-E. There's Women in Transition Lifeline, which is 215-751-1111. And the number for Menergy is 215-242-2235. There is support. There are services out there even under the crisis of this pandemic. I do want to talk about working remotely. And Tony, maybe I can go back to you first, and then Irene, I'm interested in the kind of work that you've been doing with women who call and are part of Women in Transition. How is that? Therapists that I know say that, yeah, it's great to be able to do therapy remotely, but it's not exactly the same of what happens in the office. How are you dealing with that?
Yeah, I mean, certainly there's lots of logistical challenges. People can access it very easily and have have a lot of knowledge about how to use the technology. Others have difficulty getting access or just aren't as familiar. So we're ending up doing a lot of coaching with people and trying to sort of problem solve challenges for people to be able to get access. And certainly I'm not wanting to claim that we're doing that 100% successfully. It's challenging, especially in a place like Philly. You know, Philly is a hard place to do programming of any kind. This is
Why is that?
Large city.
Why is that?
Well, it's the large city with the biggest population, biggest percentage of population of people in deep poverty. Yeah. That's less than half of the federal poverty line, sort of the level of need where it's difficult to get money even to ride public transportation. Having expectations for people to have good access to technology when they're at that level of finances is really unrealistic, and it creates real problems.
Sure. And was there obviously before the pandemic?
That was there before the pandemic. But this, you know, the pandemic is really calling into our sight in more vivid ways all the inequities that have existed since before it. It's affecting people in terms of how their health outcomes are, but also their ability to access things like our support systems.
Absolutely.
So it's really a problem.
Irene, same question to you, and I'm interested in the kind of counseling that you have been able to do.
So we're providing telephone counseling. We're providing e-lifeline, where people can email their concerns in and communicate with a counselor through email. And then we're providing counseling through Zoom and therapy through Zoom as well. And then we're also providing peer support groups through Zoom. So, but what we're finding is access is really a challenge for a lot of people. Say, for example, you making a phone call. You know, everyone doesn't have an unlimited minutes program. And so that's a concern. We're looking at how we can supplement people to purchase a card or something that can help people with their minutes. We also realize with Zoom, if people are calling in, we needed an account with a toll-free number because people were incurring charges of calling into Zoom. And so we're working as best we can with access and with the technology, but what's coming up for a lot of people, because everybody is at home, is privacy. You know, just being able to be in a space, to be on the phone or to be on the computer and have a sense of that no one else is listening and that you can just, you know, say what you want to say. And confidentiality, of course, because those two kind of go hand in hand. What the upside of that is, we're meeting the cutest dogs and the cutest little children.
I'm so glad to hear that.
On Zoom, because they just wander in the room. The children wander in asking for cereal, and then the dog just comes in and jumps up on the person's lap. So there are some very, very touching moments from this. But people are adapting. Like folks are very resilient.
Yeah.
And they're adapting. I mean, we're providing services for new clients as well. So we're actually doing new intakes on the phone, and our kept rate is about the same as it is when we're doing intakes in person, and that's amazing.
That is amazing.
It speaks to the need, but it speaks to that people are just resilient.
You know, Tony, I think when we are watching TV and people are being interviewed, you do get to see where people live. And I wonder, from based on what Irene said, seeing children and puppy dogs, are there things that you have learned from Zooming with clients?
Yeah, I mean, you certainly get a clearer sense of what people's sort of living situations are, in both in terms of like some of the stuff that Irene talked about in privacy and an actual physical space, but also a little bit of a sense of sort of like what their home life is just simply looks like. It's a fascinating moment. It's breaking down a lot of sort of the kind of barriers that we've had for formal interactions like this. Mm-hmm. At the same time that it really is quite challenging.
Sure.
And also, there's some real questions about like how sustainable is this? How long will this go on? What are the finances involved with it, especially as the city is really looking at some budgetary shortfalls? We heard some of that at the beginning of the hour at the news call.
School district, for one.
Exactly. Yeah, I'm very concerned about that impact of COVID, of the way in which it really does present a real challenge to the work that has been getting built up in the city to be able to support and hold people accountable in situations like this. I think we're mm-hmm. at a pretty critical moment where there's going to be real pressures.
Irene, let me go back to you, and I even go back to children. And as we know, the schools are closed in Philadelphia across the state and in many other states as well. But oftentimes it's a coach or it's a counselor or it's a teacher that knows that there might be something or sees something in a student that tells them that there is trouble at home. How, under these circumstances, you don't have those people whose job essentially it is to be mandated reporters, how do we get that information?
We get it from with the circumstances now. We would get it from the parent. Mm-hmm. The parents that we work with, we work around the fact that this is learned behavior, and so we work with parents on what to look for in terms of behavior with their children. And so those are some of the things that we discuss with them in terms of, I mean, we're not the experts on parenting, but we can talk with them about if they see something, it's best to talk about it with us, so that we can give them some guidelines on what to do, what referrals we can make, for those children, so that we are not, so that we can break the cycle, that we're not just, you know, doing this from generation to generation. So we ask them to look for certain behaviors and work with them on how to communicate about what those behaviors look like, what they feel like, and how we can help move those children forward into being able to build healthy relationships.
Let me just quickly reintroduce you. We're talking on Radio Times today about domestic violence during the pandemic. Not an easy conversation to have, but an important one. How the quarantine can make it harder for people to get help, and also what agencies are doing to provide support and treatment services. Irene Lindsay Brantley, Program Director at Women in Transition. That's a nonprofit in Philadelphia, and they do provide domestic violence counseling, addiction recovery services. Tony Lapp, Co-Director of Menergy, and that's an intervention, treatment, training, and education program, and they work to stop harmful behavior and intimate partner violence. And again, we want to hear from you. Any questions or comments, radiotimes@whyy.org. You can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times, and you can leave a comment on our Facebook page. I do want to just make to follow up, and I think this is something you said, Irene, but Tony, I want to hear from you as well, which is how safe someone feels to have even a quiet phone call, Irene, with your organization, knowing that someone could overhear them and that could get them, you know, that could really put them in deep danger. How do you get around that?
Yeah. So one of the things that we do is safety plan at the beginning of the phone call about what to do if someone walks in into the room, what to do about if you're on a computer and someone walks in. So we safety plan about how to exit out of a screen, you know, how to hang up on the call, and so that we know if the person hangs up suddenly, we know that someone came into the room. We try to get safe callback information even prior to the call to make sure that it's safe. We may text before the call to say, is it okay to talk, just to be sure, because one thing we know about a domestic violence situation, things can change on a dime. Right. And so, and if a person does not make the appointment, we're careful about how we respond in case there was an issue with where their partner found out that they were talking to us. And so it's like we're walking on eggshells now. Like, you know, we always talk about survivors walking on eggshells. We're walking on eggshells too, to try to provide services as safely as we can.
Tony, you want to speak to that as well? And I realize we're talking about intimate partner violence, so there is no specific gender. But I think broadly speaking, I'm not sure exactly what the statistics are, but largely speaking, it is men abusing women. You can correct me if I'm wrong there. But I'm interested in just in the perpetrator or the abuser's perspective, if they see their partner, you know, talking to Irene and people at her organization, why that might trigger something and sort of to understand it from their perspective.
Yeah. I mean, certainly it's true that it has been historically mostly men that have come to our program, although that has over time shifted a decent amount, such that that's part of the motivation for us changing our name to Cordea. That's what, where we're headed, is just to reflect the confusion that's been created in the idea that we don't just see men in our program. But we do, I mean, what we do see is people who have a history of hurting somebody. And because sort of our bottom line mission is that we're certainly the thing we're trying to avoid is making things worse for the person that's getting hurt. One, in this particular situation, one of the things that we're trying to make sure is that if we're going to be offering any kind of support or accountability or help, that it's not going to be happening in a place that actually ends up coming back to create more problems for the for the survivor. So that means we're doing a lot of real specific logistical things around figuring out what spaces the person has access to, how privately they can speak. We're doing, we're spending time sort of thinking about how calm or upset a person may be in a given moment, because they don't really have time after the interaction with us to travel home and decompress. So we have to be thinking about that as well a little bit. I want to say that, you know, there's a lot of ways that people access programs like ours, but typically it's been because they stand to lose something, whether that be because there's some kind of a court case, or because their partner is unhappy or threatening to leave them, whatever the reason is, whatever system has got involved. But people do also come to us just because they on some level recognize that their life is kind of a mess at this moment. So, you know, with your permission, Marty, I did actually want to comment to your listeners, especially if there are any listeners out there who might be struggling a little bit with the idea that maybe they've been handling themselves in ways that aren't good. Is that okay?
Yeah.
I want to say this. I want to say that if you're listening and this is making you uncomfortable, because despite the fact that most people who know you outside the home would think you're a pretty decent person, and because you in your own heart think of yourself as a decent person, but when you're listening today, what it's making you think about is how poorly you've handled yourself with your partner or your kids. If that's where your thoughts are going when you're listening, I'd like to tell you you're not alone. There's both good news, there's bad news. The good news is many people who've acted similarly to you have found ways to change that. The bad news is it's not easy to do. It takes a lot of work. It's not always comfortable, but it's a pretty honorable step to reach for help, and certainly can be of tremendous benefit to you or your family, and could be really simple. You could make a call today, and if you would, that would be a pretty remarkable thing. The number's 215-242-2235. I wish it for you. I hope you want it for yourself.
Well, I appreciate you saying that, Tony.
That's awesome.
Yeah, absolutely. Irene, we have a tweet for you from Abby. She says, are there any shelters available in the Philadelphia area? What's the status of that? Go ahead.
Okay, so Philadelphia has two shelters for survivors of domestic violence. They're both run by Women Against Abuse, who is one of our partners on the Philadelphia Domestic Violence Hotline. And I can tell you that both those shelters are full.
Wow.
They're small, and each is 100 beds, including children. So even without COVID, they're pretty much at capacity. So when people say just leave in Philadelphia, that could mean that person is just going to be homeless because the services are maxed out on a good day. So one of the things that we do on the hotline is safety plan about what other options are available. I mean, is city shelters an option? Are there family and friends that are options? We have people who have gone to, who have not felt safe to even call us and have gone to the police station to be able to call the hotline because that's the only place where they felt safe. So, when you talk about Philadelphia and the population and the poverty rate, that's just an ongoing problem even before COVID.
Well, I'll tell you so
the options are not just for somebody to say just leave. That's not a viable option for a lot of people in Philadelphia.
And I want to pick up on that. And we are talking about the problem of domestic violence. It's a longstanding, often hidden problem, but also one that has been exacerbated because of these stay-at-home orders and the pandemic itself. And we're going to take a very short break and then get back to our conversation again. Irene Lindsay Brantley, Program Director at Women in Transition. Tony Lapp, a co-director of Menergy. And we've got an attorney, Susan Perlstein. She'll be joining us after this very short break. And you can join our conversation. Send us an email at whyy.org, and you can tweet us at WHYY Radio Times. And again, the 24-hour Philadelphia Domestic Abuse Hotline, 1-866-723-3014. 866-723-3014. We'll be right back. I'm Marty Mosco.
Supporting WHYY, Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
And you're listening to Radio Times here on WHYY in Philadelphia. We've been talking about domestic violence during the pandemic, stay-at-home orders, what agencies are doing to help people to get the help they need. And again, our guests have been Irene Lindsay Brantley, Program Director at Women in Transition, and Tony Lapp, Co-Director of Menergy. Now we want to add to the conversation and discuss some of the legal services and resources that are available to those facing intimate partner violence. And Susan Perlstein has joined us. She's an attorney, co-supervisor of the Family Law Unit, and that's at Philadelphia Legal Assistance. And Susan Perlstein, nice to have you with us on Radio Times as well.
Thank you, Marty.
You're very welcome. This is a question I put to our first guest, but I just want to give you a chance to weigh in on this as well. I mean, we do think for some people, home is a haven, a way of protecting yourself against this virus. But for others, of course, it is a dangerous place to be. And I just want to give you a chance to speak to that.
Yes. Unfortunately, for a lot of survivors of intimate partner violence, being home right now is really scary. Tensions, as the other guests have mentioned, tensions are high. People are very stressed out about the pandemic, about loss of income, just being home with your partner on 24/7 basis is difficult for anyone, even in a good relationship. So in relationships that are fraught with control and physical, sexual, emotional abuse, it can be very, very difficult right now.
Are courts open in terms of, and I realize that's often, you know, sort of at the end of what happens in circumstances like this, but what are the legal options that someone who is the victim of intimate partner violence has?
Right. So we're lucky in Philadelphia that our courts, even though the physical building is closed, the court is open and access is open for domestic violence survivors. So you can file a petition for protection from abuse. You can file via email or phone at certain hours of the day. And just as always in Philadelphia, our emergency filing site remains open, and that is at the Criminal Justice Center at 13th and Filbert. And that is always open during regular times when the court is closed. So if there's a severe incident of abuse and you cannot wait until the next business day, you can always go to the Criminal Justice Center and file on an emergency basis. And that remains open.
But you have to leave and go there, right?
Yes, you have to leave and go there physically. For the regular filing unit at Family Court, of course, the physical building is closed, but you can call in and somebody there will do an interview with you over the phone and help you fill out your petition and get that filed, or you can email a petition in. And those forms are available on the court's website. The domestic violence hotline in Philadelphia can link you up with resources. Okay. And my organization, Philadelphia Legal Assistance, our intake has remained open during the crisis. We continue to be open, and we are available to help survivors figure out what course of action they want to take, do safety planning, and possibly file for a protection order if that's the route that they want to go.
One more question to you, Susan, before we get our other guests back into the conversation. Are protection orders from abuse, is that a complicated form? Is it hard to fill it out? Is it hard to have a case heard?
Yeah, it's a complicated process in some ways, but the form is not very difficult. And as I said, there are people to assist either at the court or in my organization or at Women Against Abuse who can help survivors file that petition if they don't feel comfortable doing it on their own. The process is somewhat long and difficult during regular times, mm-hmm. but it takes some time, but it is a process that there's help for you if you want to file and you're not able to do it on your own. You don't have to have an attorney. My organization provides free legal services for people who can't afford it in Philadelphia for domestic violence survivors and others. So it's definitely doable. The form is not that difficult. There's several steps in the process, but there are people to help you throughout the process to make sure you can get that done and stay safe and that your family can stay safe.
Irene, let me go back to you and Tony as well. It's a big step, and oftentimes it takes multiple steps to leave an abusive situation or home situation. What's the kind of advice that you give to people who are the victims or survivors of intimate partner violence about taking that next step and saying, okay, I'm out of here?
So one of the first things is it's not as simple as it sounds, right. that it does take planning, unless it's a life or death situation and people just have to get out at that moment. But most of it involves planning, especially now, because there are fewer options available to folks. Folks are feeling fear and anxiety around the options that do exist. So do I stay at home? Or do I leave home and go to a communal environment and risk COVID-19?
Yeah.
I can't just run to my family and friends because of COVID-19. If I leave and I have to go to one of the night shelters like House of Passage, I could possibly be exposing myself to COVID. So the options. There's a lot of anxiety around the options that are available. And then when there are people that we talk to who had planned to leave, had done everything right, we're going to move March 23rd, for example, and everything got put on hold. And so we work with them about how to try to maintain the assurance that they will get out, is that this is delaying that process, and how to keep them emotionally safe while that's going on.
We talk to survivors who've already left, and by the way, we work with all genders, so we have mm-hmm. male survivors as well,
right.
who have left, but feel that they have to go back now because they left, and then they got laid off, and so they're having anxiety around being able to pay the rent and feeling like I might as well go back to what I know than be out here mm-hmm. with all these layers of unknown, and so we have. That and then the financial piece is just, and not just the financial, because I want to talk a little bit about our work with clients who are in recovery. In this confined environment, we're finding more and more that drugs are being introduced back into the relationship. Either people are relapsing, or either the abusive partner is bringing drugs and encouraging the survivor to start using drugs to cope with this. So that's like another ripple.
Absolutely. Hold on, only just because I want to get Tony in and I want to go back to Susan, okay. and we've got a bunch of comments here as well. And I wonder, Tony, if you could just speak to all the things that Irene and Susan were talking about, but I guess specifically when drugs or alcohol or alcohol are part of the configuration, how critical is that?
Sure. I mean, mostly we would think of that as something that gets in the way of people being able to do productive work, right? And so sometimes it's something that can be worked on at the same time, and sometimes it's something that has to be addressed ahead of time. It certainly plays a factor for some folks, mostly as an aggravating factor, not sort of causing things usually, mm-hmm. but making it worse.
There's someone, actually a caller doesn't want to use their name, but they said, is there a hotline or organization for adults caring for verbally abusive parents with dementia? And that, of course, is just sort of multiple, you know, levels of problems. And I wonder, Irene, is there something or some organization that knows, maybe an elder organization that could help mm-hmm. under those circumstances?
Pennsylvania Corporation for Aging are the experts in that mm-hmm. field. I mean, you can actually report situations of violence to them. I don't have their phone number right on hand, but it's PCA, Pennsylvania PCA. Corporation for Aging.
Okay, I'll see if one of the producers can get that number. We'll put that out there as mm-hmm. well. Susan, I'd like to go back to you. We were talking about children earlier in our conversation with our other two guests before you joined us. But from a legal point of view, if there are children involved or perhaps even custody issues involved, how complicated has that gotten under these pandemic stay-at-home orders?
Yeah, Marty, I'm glad you brought that up because that is a very important factor in all of this right now, and it is really complicating domestic violence situations for survivors. So right now, the court is closed, and the only custody filings that are being accepted are emergency custody filings. Mm-hmm. And those can be done via email as well, which is a really great way that the court has continued access for people. But it's very limited in its relief. So it has to be a very serious situation where the child or children are in imminent physical harm. So that relief is very limited. And, you know, part of the control and the abuse that we see going on right now is a lot of withholding of children from one parent or caregiver. So that makes the situation very difficult when there is no availability to get into court on an immediate basis if the child is not in, you know, immediate physical harm. The protection from abuse process can also handle custody issues on a temporary basis. So if you were to file a petition for relief under the Protection from Abuse Act, you can seek having the abuser be evicted from the home, as well as be being prohibited from abusing, harassing, stalking, threatening you. You can also request relief in the form of temporary custody of your children. So that is a very important piece of the relief sure. that can be given in a protection from abuse proceeding. I also want to just mention that Irene mentioned the Women Against Abuse shelters. The shelters are trying to provide hotel vouchers for people so they don't have to go into a communal shelter. It's not the easiest process, but it can be done. So if you're out there and wondering, just call the hotline. And there are shelters in other counties that when Philadelphia County shelters are full, the domestic violence shelters in the other counties can sometimes help out.
That's good to know. Tony, let me go back to you. And all three of your organizations are in Philadelphia, but I just want to make sure our listeners don't get the impression that this is just an urban problem. And I wonder if you could just sort of speak to just, and again, this is hard to talk about. It's often a hidden problem or not so hidden problem, but it's been a chronic problem, and it's just been exacerbated by this pandemic. But I just want to make sure our listeners know that this is not just an urban poor problem.
No, absolutely not. You know, in many ways, domestic violence is a little bit in this social ill equivalent of something like a COVID-19. You know, there's lots of ways it happens in private, it hides, the symptoms are shifty, hard to pin down. You know, how many times have I convinced myself that I have COVID during this, just like so many people I know? Lots of survivors ask themselves, yeah, this is bad. I know this is hard, but is this abuse? The other thing is that its costs emerge in other settings, and they're huge. Lost productivity, healthcare expenses, criminal justice intervention. We spend so much money addressing the effects of domestic violence, which is part of why, you know, I've mentioned a couple times, I'm pretty concerned about the finances of all this and our city, just because I think we're really going to be making some really hard decisions in the next months. And I'm not clear what's going to happen with the services that we currently offer. I'm proud of Philadelphia. Philadelphia's had some real champions that have made services accessible to people with low income. The child welfare system in the city is remarkable in terms of the level of support it's given. Cynthia Figueroa was very instrumental in all of that. But we have the potential of losing a lot of ground with this. I'm hoping that we can be thinking about how to be investing smartly, because I worry that if we don't keep finances here, that we could end up paying much bigger costs down the road for people. Mm-hmm. And I worry
Absolutely.
About that.
Absolutely. Right. Let me give out the phone number for the Philadelphia Corporation for Aging. Has a 24/7 helpline, 215-765-9040. And we'll put that on our Facebook page. We're nearly out of time, but Irene, an email from Margaret asking, can your guests suggest ways for mental health professionals to volunteer to help with phone counseling services? And we have about a minute or so. I wonder if you could respond to that. Sure, go ahead.
Okay. Yes. Call the Lifeline, 215-751-1111. And mention that you're interested in volunteering, or go on our website at helpwomen.org, and you'll see a page for volunteers, and go through that page, read about our program, and then contact us that way. Much appreciated.
Absolutely. And Susan, I guess I'll give you the last word here. Anything we didn't cover that you just think is important for our listeners to know?
Yeah, I just want to make sure that people know the court is open. They can file. They can call our agency. Our hotline is open Mondays through Thursdays, 9:30 to noon, 215-981-3838. And that all of these services that we're talking about are accessible to people who don't speak English. We all use language access services, and it's accessible to undocumented folks as well. Anybody can reach out to us for their services.
All right. Well, I appreciate the work that all three of you were doing. And we've got a lot of phone numbers there. And again, we will put them on our Facebook page, and you can check them out and hopefully use them if you need them. Susan Perlstein, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
You're welcome. She's an attorney co-supervisor of the Family Law Unit. That's at Philadelphia Legal Assistance. And Tony Lapp, thanks for joining us as well.
Thank you, Marty. Stay safe and healthy.
You too. And he's co-director of Menergy. And Irene Lindsay Brantley, program director for Women in Transition, thank you so much for joining us on Radio Times.
Thank you. And I want to say that our services are free.
Absolutely. Go to whyy.org/radiotimes to find out more about the program. And again, there is that Facebook page. We're going to put a lot of numbers there, and hopefully they will be useful to you or someone that you know. Al Banks, the engineer for today's edition of Radio Times, the show produced by Debbie Bilder, John Ahrens, and Kelsey Hansen. I'm Marty Moscowen. Thank you so much for joining us.